Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully Hanley.
You guys are ignorant and you're also naive.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
We're delighted to welcome in Porter Moser, the Loyola head coach in Atlanta, getting ready for one more game to the Final Four, the Elite Eight. Wow. Porter, that is just phenomenal. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys. It sounds crazy to hear what you just said, man. That lead in.
Mully went to school there. You're leading this whole thing, and I get chills every time I hear a highlight.
You know what? That's what's cool about this whole run. Obviously, the loyal, the faithful, loyal alum, I mean, the pride that's going on is awesome. But also for the city of Chicago. I mean, it's Loyola of Chicago. Because I've said it, because I'm from here, that it's a prideful sports town. You and I have talked about this. When I got here, they said, oh, it's a pro town. And it's not a pro town. It's a fan town. They love their sports team. They respect teams that play hard, play tough. And it's always been that way. And I love how Chicago's getting behind this team.
Porter, congratulations. We're really looking forward to this game. It's great to see what you're doing.
Blue Valley Northwest. This is something here. Chicago, you got a Final Four team. The Ramblers of Loyola Chicago headed to San Antonio.
Mully and Hanley.
Fruitin'.
I'm Ragnar. Pay me.
That's how I roll, buddy.
Start your day with the teams you know.
How did a small Division I school in Chicago get to the Final Four?
It's the accumulation of a lot of people. It's not one person. It's accumulation of a group that is resilient and tough and believes and invested. How much these kids invested, this just didn't happen 2 weeks ago. But it's not one person. It's not one player. It's a collaboration of a lot of tough, high-character people.
Mully Hanley.
This is all tricky.
Here we go!
Go Ramblers! Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got a lot of thoughts about it, Brian, but I got to tell you, it is surreal and in a sense kind of awe-inspiring that the Loyola Ramblers have made the Final Four.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And you know, I got to tell you, I really firmly believe this. I think that we're all underdogs in life, you know? We are all, every one of us, we're underdogs. We're people that it doesn't matter, you know, how privileged you are, what your background, life kind of stacks the odds on you. And you can feel, and there are various people who feel it more deeply than others, but you can feel like you're not going to get ahead and nothing's going to work in your life and things aren't, you know, you're going to be put down by the man, for lack of a better term. Your life will make us all, will create disadvantages to all of us. And, any blow against the established order, any blow against the establishment feels like a victory for all of us. It really feels like you can identify. It's like when you win. You know, when you beat something, odds that are totally against you, it's almost like a personal favor has happened. Like, you know, like, thank you, I owe you one, because it's all lined up against you, man. And upsets, they're just the greatest thing in sports. And you know, we don't see them in all sports. It takes a particular kind of sport to give you the upset, which is that's the glamour. That's the attraction of the NCAA tournament.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just one game and you can move on. It's one game and anything can happen. Virginia can lose to a 16 seed, right? Kentucky can go down to Kansas State. You know, the Ramblers can follow their path and all of a sudden they're running into teams that they're better matched with than the ones they started. And now, you know, they get Michigan in the Final Four, and I understand that everybody kind of believes that the run is over. But I felt that way maybe when they got to the Elite Eight, right? When they got to the Sweet 16. So maybe even when they got to the tournament, you know? I mean, I really thought they were going to win a couple of games. We talked about that. You had them into the Elite Eight. And once it started, you kind of, you know, there's something about these stories. There's something about this kind of story. It's not because I went there. It's not because you picked them.
It's just because of the basketball. You're so right. I mean, it upsets happen in sports, but this is the perfect storm. And I mean, it's the personalities. It's the city being bereft of winning winter team right now, right? I mean, the Blackhawks flamed out. The Bulls are trying to do whatever they're trying to do. There's just, you know, everyone's waiting for opening day and, you know, the Sox are a few years away. Loyola arrived on the scene at the perfect time, and they are, I mean, all the intangibles, the likability, the team concept, right? There's not an NBA prospect there that, you know, they live and die with, all of it. They're the perfect story with all the perfect ingredients to go along with it.
It's not just like the oldest story in sports, although it's the oldest story in sports. It's the oldest story in your culture.
Yeah.
You know, go back, you know, think about, you know, David versus Goliath is in the Bible, right? Joseph and his many-colored coat, that's in the Bible. You know, you have this stuff through the course of all the things that affect you that you don't even realize are affecting you. King Arthur pulling a sword out, right? The Arthurian legend. Cinderella. You know, sports takes fairy tales and makes them real. Great Expectations, Horatio Alger, this rags to riches stuff that, you know, this is rags to riches in a single tournament. It's the 2018 Loyola of Chicago Ramblers, as they're now known. Okay, Loyola of Chicago, I'm on board. LUC, fair enough. I don't care. Let's get Chicago involved. I just think that it's the kind of story that is deeply embedded in all of us. And when you see it happen, you like it, no matter who it is. To have it happen here in Chicago, to have it happen with a program like that is just miraculous. I mean, this is we talked about it when they won the first game. It's kind of a Disney movie with Sister Jean and all that stuff. Now it's really getting into Disney movie territory,
right?
Oh,
absolutely.
Now you got the big games coming. And you know what? Hey, Michigan looks great. Michigan won the Big Ten tournament. They've been on fire. They played poorly in a couple of games.
Well, I love that all the experts are dismissing Michigan as much as they're dismissing Loyola now. They're spending all the time breaking down Villanova and Kansas because those are the Kansas blue blood and Villanova, recent champion. And, you know, the left side, that's nice. It's a nice little story, Loyola. And then immediately, let's break down the game that should be played Monday night.
Yeah, that's the championship. Yeah, that's the real championship. I mean, I hear that stuff too, and I'm not necessarily arguing with that, but I think it's, you know, here's what I'm saying. This is blue collar against blue bloods, blue collar against blue chips.
Yep.
You know, this is a basketball team that is representative of all of us in a large way against the established order of things.
Sure.
So I'm all for, you know, one for the little guy. And I would be anyway. And I know that all the teams, the 11 seeds they've gotten in, this is where they stop. But you know what? Loyola beat a 3 seed already in this tournament. They can beat another 3 seed. Here's the reality of life is you don't get to the Final Four by accident. This isn't just because other teams lost in other brackets. You don't win 4 games in the NCAA tournament, 3 of them by a combined 4 points, to get to a Final Four by accident.
You don't win 21 of your last 22. Was their win streak 14 now? I mean, that's no fluke, right? And what you've done in this tournament, now you've taken on different types of teams and beaten them whatever way they want to play, right? You've had more athletic teams. You've had teams that mirrored you. I mean, my only disappointment Saturday is what, you know, they did so easily. I'm so used to the cardiac kids. You know, I'm waiting for, you know.
It was extraordinary the way they won that game, to take a lead and to hold the lead and to extend the lead.
And just that little run in the, you know, 10-minute mark of the second half, the Kansas State goes on that 10-0 run, but I never, ever felt like this thing was crumbling down. They just restored world order at some point in the next couple of minutes, and off you go. Right. I mean, just pulled away yet again.
Yeah, they got the lead up to a point where I felt that it would take a lot out of the other team to get back in the game. So when they had the 10-point run, that, you know, takes a lot out of you. You almost have to time that run perfectly where you come right to the end of the game, and it, obviously that didn't happen. And Loyola, it was so great. They got some of these guys on the end of the bench into the game for the last minute of the game. I mean, you know, I thought that was just magic. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, get to say they played in an NCAA tournament game.
There you go. And, Loyola hasn't lost since January 31st at Bradley. They have had an unbelievable run. Is it over? Is it the Final Four and that's it? Hey, you know, probably, okay, odds would say, right? I mean, I don't think there's going to be a ton of people jumping on their bandwagon now, but the fact is that when the traditional order gets set on its head, which is what they've managed to achieve here, that is a victory for all of us. And, you know, mere anarchy is lucid upon the world right now, buddy. You don't have to be Willie Yates to figure that one out. It's just unbelievable to see what they've managed to do in this tournament.
No, it's been an awful lot of fun. Can't wait till next weekend. And, if you're not enjoying this ride, you better check your sports ticker, because if you're not enjoying Loyola, you're not really enjoying sports.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the hell out of it for other reasons. But as I said, it's not my story. It's not, you know, it's everybody's story. It's this. It's a cultural type thing. You know, tap into your very genetics. Check the gene code. This is, you know, sports makes fairy tales come to life. And we're seeing it happen here with a team like the Loyola Ramblers in the Final Four. They're in the Final Four. We get to talk about them for another week. I get to go to the game. I've made my reservation.
That's outstanding.
I'm abandoning my family on our little spring break, and I'm flying into Austin of all places and driving an hour and a half. But I'll get there before the game starts. I'll watch a game or two, and I'll be home for Easter Mass. How about that? That's the plan. And if the Ramblers end up winning that game, then guess what? I'll have to go back on Monday.
It's all about resurrection.
Unfortunately, I can't blow off Easter. We're hosting. 312-644-6767.
Hurry up, eat the ham. Let's go. I got to go.
That's the number. We have a lot planned for you today. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to talk about, we got the start of the season beginning in baseball. We've got news happening all over the sports world. But we also have this great little local story that, as we talked about, is representative to larger cultural issues, and we can all get on board. The bandwagon is wide open for everybody. There's plenty of room. There's like whole sections of it that can be filled up, and you're on board with it, I hope. It's Mully and Hanley. The 5 at 5 is next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment is brought to you by Walgreens. Allergy season is here, so stop by Walgreens for brands like Allegra and get 24-hour relief for your toughest allergy symptoms. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hanley. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley starts now.
How did the Loyola Ramblers make it to the Final Four? Can they win again? And who must be the MVP if they are to make the championship game?
Yeah, I think that they got there because they're good enough. I think that it's I think we're trying to come up with all these little scenarios and all these things. Look, I mean, the fact that Virginia lost obviously helped a ton. The fact that Cincinnati lost, the fact that Kentucky lost, there's a lot of teams that got beaten and were upset in that regional. Upset, by the way, not a horse racing term. I was very surprised to learn that as I thought about it and looked it up. I had always operated under the assumption that upset was the only horse to ever beat Man of War, and that's how
it came
upset
into our,
came in. But then somebody said, well, why do you think the horse was called Upset? And I guess the research says that that the term came into sports writing and the sports arena about 10 to 20 years before Upset beat Man of War back in whatever, 19... anyway, that's an aside. I would say 1919? I just said it. There you go. Is that accurate, though, that Upset is... I was right about it. So there you go. That happens every once in a while, too. I did look it up, not recently. Did you know Dark Horse is obviously another sports horse racing term?
Mm-hmm.
Dark Horse, the dark in Dark Horse is unknown. So, like, if you didn't have all the information about a horse in the race, you didn't know the sire of the dam, or you didn't know the background of the horse, it was a dark horse. Nothing to do with the color of the animal or anything like that. That's where Dark Horse comes
from. Did not know that.
Underdog, of course, is a I don't know how I'm on this tangent.
Cartoon.
It is no, that's Wonder Dog. Underdog.
No, there's Underdog too.
Well, Underdog is a. This is interesting for a cartoon. It's a dog fighting term. There is the top dog and the underdog.
Oh boy.
So you know it's pretty brutal to think about, but these are terms that are being applied to the Loyola Ramblers. They are certainly the ultimate dark horse. They are certainly. An underdog, and they are certainly an upset to get there. But having said that, I think that you win the games that are in front of you. That's all you can do. I'm not going to sit here and tell you they'd have knocked off Virginia without a problem, that they would have beaten Cincinnati. They would have, I mean, you know, the entire bracket broke their way. And there is this sort of hint of miracle to it with the Sister Jean, the nun, you know, the team chaplain. There's a sense that there has been divine intervention in some fashion, but it's really just beating the teams in front of you. Now you got another number three seed. You've already beaten one. I don't know. I mean, maybe this is it. Maybe they've met their moment, but and that's it. But I hope. I don't think there's a finish line. I don't think the team feels they're done.
No finish line. And since you summarized that about as well as it can be summarized, I would say the MVP, in order to get past Saturday, tell me which Michigan team is going to show up. They had a 99-point game where they shot 62%. And then comes yesterday, and, I mean, you look at this thing. They went 8.5 minutes with one field goal. I mean, they had, what, 20? There was a stretch there. There were 22 turnovers between the two teams in the first half. So I don't know. You know, now defense is the Michigan calling card. That's what they're leaning on. Because they're not sure what offenses, you know, they're going to produce game to game. So I don't expect them to shoot 62%. I don't expect them to be turning the ball over every possession either. So if you're going to have to value each and every possession, then it has to be Clayton Custer. Not saying he has to have a great scoring night, but he has to direct that offense, and they have to continue to
to control the game.
That's right. And you can't lose the ball. You can't be being turned over by Michigan, because that's what they're going to go in trying to do. They're going to if they can make threes, and they didn't make them by any stretch of the imagination the other night, four for 22 from beyond the arc. So if they're jacking those up, Loyola should be in good stead, because we see what that offense is all about. It's finding the open man, making the extra pass, taking the back cut, taking the reverse layup. I mean, it's a thing of beauties.
Did you see that statistic that they only score from under the basket or beyond the three-point arc, that going into the last game – they had taken 11 shots, which would, you know, like a regular jumper type shots.
Yeah, mid-range.
And they were like 5 or 6 of 11. And that was what they were saying on the game. Like, all you got to do is defend the three-point line and defend the basket, and you won the game.
Well, it sounds easy, right?
It sounds easy. Very uncomplicated.
Yeah. But, I mean, look,
but those two things are related.
And we've talked about it. Each guy has had their moment. And, I mean, Ben Richardson was just on. I mean, he was out of his mind. 5 or 6 threes and making it look effortless, right?
Career high
to
get to the Final Four. But awesome is that?
Just doing that 10-minute span there where he hit everything. I mean, you know, including a four-point play.
He is a monster.
Kansas kid against Kansas State.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about this the other day. To say that going into that Kansas State game, somewhere in the back of your mind, you wondered if Kentucky wasn't the better matchup because it was such a young Kentucky team. And you might have liked the more disciplined, well-coached machine that Loyola seems to be against. But you know what? Then they go out and just dismantle Kansas State. I mean, it just they continue to surprise me, right? I think you've got them figured out, and it's going to be a nail-biter. And no, we got this. We go out there and just make it look easy.
Is it possible that the Loyola Ramblers made the Final Four? They're great. Is that possible? I mean, They had have had five losses all year. Maybe they
three when the point guard was out with an injury.
There you go. Maybe they would have been 15-3 in the heavy conferences. Who knows? Maybe this team, because we all underestimated them because, well, they're in the Missouri Valley Conference and they're Loyola. So maybe they're just really good. Maybe they're not getting lucky. Maybe it's not fortunate. Maybe it's not Sister Jean. Maybe they're really good. And I think the guy that has to be MVP for this game in the Final Four is Dante Ingram because he's from Chicago. And that would just make a really great story. So he needs to be the MVP.
Don't get greedy, Grody. It's already a good story,
he's
all right?
He's from Chicago.
I think that, well, yeah, of course they can win again. All due respect to Michigan, who actually had in the Final Four one of the few picks I actually got right in this crazy cockamamie NCAA basketball tournament. But I think that they can beat Michigan because I think that still Tennessee was probably the toughest opponent they've faced up to this point. And all due respect to Michigan, who won their conference tournament. They played really well at the end of the season. Peaking at the right time is always the key in any sort of playoff or tournament situation. But I think Loyola has proven when they're hitting their threes, when they're defending, when they're getting out on the break, which is the thing that surprised me the most about this team, is that every game people would say, oh, well, they're going up against bigger, stronger, faster athletes. Loyola has had no problem throughout the tournament running with anybody, whether it's getting down on the defensive end or starting the fast break. So I think athletically, they're probably on par with Michigan. And if they're going to win again, get to the championship game, you know, I have to say it's got to be Clayton Custer to be the MVP. Not only was he the conference player of the year, he's the leader on that team, the elder statesman, so to speak. And I'm really, really pumped up for this on Saturday. I'm fully on board and indoctrined with this bandwagon. Let's go.
And I definitely am, too. And what do the Ramblers need to do? How did they win? Defense and the consistency of their shooting game. I mean, they had a stretch in the first half where they made 9 straight baskets. I mean, the consistency on the offensive end for the Ramblers is great. When I jumped on the bandwagon myself, I didn't realize just how efficient they are on offense. And the defense is going to be what is going to win the game against Michigan. They'll need to lock them down defensively. And the MVP, in my mind, is going to have to be Cameron Krutwig. He's going to have to do his thing in the post on both ends of the floor and give them a big contribution on offense.
You know what? That's a really complex and difficult question to answer in whatever time we have.
Do you expect Loyola to step up and pay Coach Porter Moser, or will he leave for another job when the tournament ends?
This is the tough part of this time of year, especially when it impacts your school, your university. But it's you know, college basketball. I mean, it's an annual rite of spring where the successful coaches move on. And I expect Loyola to fully step up and go to the mats and give Porter Moser an offer that's going to be very flattering. But I'm not so sure that they have the coffers to exceed what is Xavier. I mean, that Xavier job, when I saw Chris Mack interviewing for the Louisville job and he's expected to be named there in the next couple of days, that I said, uh-oh, that makes too much sense. Jesuit school, you know, bigger program in terms of its resources. You know, but when I keep going back to seeing Porter Moser at Wrigley Field each summer, and he goes to a ton of Cubs games, and, you know, he bounded up and down the steps between innings and shaking hands, and this was before he was the mayor of the city, right? This was last summer and summer previous where a lot of people didn't even know who he was, but I knew who he was, and I was watching him, and he was enjoying the hell out of, you know, having some time off, and he truly is a Chicago guy and truly is a Chicago fan. But that said, I go back to when D. Wade was taking Marquette to a Final Four and talking to some people around the university. And, you know, there was a question whether he was going to stick around for another season or go to the NBA. And one of the Marquette people said, if he doesn't go to the NBA, we shouldn't give him a degree because he's, you know, he's not as smart as we thought he was. There's a time. And I don't, no matter what magic they have going at Loyola, and I don't think this is fleeting success. I think this is something they've been building toward and that they have established a foundation, but your stock's never going to be higher. I mean, it's just not. So I expect another school to come in and just wow Porter Moser, and he's not just going for the cash, but if it's the right situation, the right type of campus, the right type of program, university, and the money's there, I think he goes.
Do I expect Loyola to step up and pay the coach? I would say their idea of stepping up and paying the coach and the reality of what you have to pay the coach are probably two different things. I think that, you know, Loyola could make him the highest paid coach in the Missouri Valley Conference, which would be around, what, $850,000?
Yeah, you get to $1 million and say, okay, you're free and clear, yeah.
Our buddy said, our buddy David Hall wrote, they got to give him $1 million, and, you know, maybe $1 million, you know, they're comfortable, the family is in a good place, and but they, you know, they need to give him $1 million on top of what he's making, right? Yep. They need to increase his pay by $1 million. I think Loyola will step up and give him what they believe to be a contract that he should take, and I think that it probably is going to not be enough money to keep him. Just guessing. I don't have much faith in the Ramblers to pay him.
Yeah, Loyola probably, I'm sure they never thought they'd be in this conversation on paying a head coach for a sport. Probably not necessarily prepared to be in the conversation by way of budget and all that stuff, but you know, we've read the stories and we've heard about how enrollment is popping at Loyola. They're getting noticed.
Yeah,
I mean, that could turn into cash, the money just from the attention that this school is getting. I think they have a big decision to make about their basketball program in general, that they have to think, like,
who do you want to be?
Yeah, is it, I mean, we could take this thing and fly with it, but we have to make a serious offer to our head coach. And if you're Porter Moser, with, you know, every chance he gets on the show with you guys, I've heard him many times, he loves talking about Chicago and being from here and what it's turned this town into in terms of, you know, the fandom that exists for Loyola. So if you're Porter Moser, you don't want to get taken advantage of with the hometown discount and all. You're saying, please, just make me an offer that I can respect. You don't have to pay me like a blue blood head coach, but just something to where you are respecting me and giving me the value that I'm worth. So I think it really comes down to Loyola getting together and deciding what they want to be.
Well, the thing is here, and I hate to trickle on the parade a little bit, but Loyola can only offer so much money. I don't think it's about them stepping up and wanting to keep Porter Moser. Of course, they know he deserves a raise. That's already been discussed.
Why can they only offer so much money? Just out of curiosity.
For comparison, you know, Grody just brought up the fact that, yeah, you don't have to pay him like John Calipari or Mike Krzyzewski or a true blue blood like that. But for comparison, Greg Marshall, the head coach at Wichita State.
Yes.
Similar, you know, stature. Of course, Wichita State's been added a little bit longer. He makes $3.3 million. Loyola does not afford to pay him anything close to that.
But look at all the Jesuit schools and what they pay their college coach, and look at Loyola. I'm just saying, you know, why can't they match whatever the price Xavier pays their coach?
Maybe an extra collection on Sunday.
Yeah, the second collection.
If that's what it takes.
Yeah, Peter Pence, and then you have you know, you got to pay for.
That'd be so great. The second collection is for the coach of
Porter Moser Fund. Yeah.
Please put your envelope sealed.
This
in
is
the
for
baskets.
The upkeep of the Vatican, and the third collection is the upkeep of the Loyola Ramblers.
Listen, I would love to see Porter Moser stay and loyal to establish themselves as, you know, the next Butler or Wichita State or Creighton in a mid-major that can become a perennial tournament team. I would love to see it. I just think financially, you know, this is one of the issues with capitalism. There's always going to be somebody that has more money than you, and whether you like it or not, that's always going to exist, unless you're that jerk from Amazon, and unless he's buying Loyola and paying the salary.
He owns everything else.
It's going to be tough.
You know, I do expect Loyola to step up. I absolutely do. I mean, you look at what Porter Moser has done for this program, and as was already brought up, what it's done for the school in terms of just interest and getting the name out there and enrollment. I absolutely expect them to step up, to bump up Porter's pay and offer him you know, something more. But you got to look at what Porter Moser is. 49 years old. I mean, he's a relatively young coach. I mean, I think he's, in terms of what Porter Moser is looking for, he's looking for that next step, I would imagine, in his career. And he loves his guys, he loves his kids, he loves the program, he loves the city. But I think in terms of the arc of his career, I think he will go with that next big job, unfortunately. As much as I would like to see him stay, I think it's about the next step for him.
I don't think I have a good answer for that.
An MLB.com poll of 50 of its experts had Chris Bryant third in MVP voting behind Bryce Harper and Joey Votto. Anthony Rizzo received no votes. Joe Maddon was also shut out as manager of the year. Which is the biggest surprise?
Biggest surprise is Bryant third, because Rizzo's going to have a hard time getting votes because Bryant's on his team. He's the representative of the group. I think there is a use-by date on Joe in terms of certain people getting tired of him, and you know, he would need to do something unbelievable to get that Manager of the Year award, because he's gotten it before, and there is just this feeling that that Joe has everything handed to him and he's overseeing. I don't agree with it, by the way, but that's what you get from success. So it doesn't surprise me that Joe was shut out, and it doesn't surprise me that Rizzo, I mean, you would think he'd get a vote or two, but it doesn't surprise me that Chris Bryant is the favored player on the Cubs, and third seems low to me.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Molly. I mean, you know, even if Joe won the World Series, led the Cubs to a second World Series title, I don't know that he'd get the award this year. You know, that they're talking about the top vote getter in this preseason poll was Mickey Callaway, the Mets coach. I mean, manager. Are you kidding me? All right, good luck. Yeah, see how that plays out.
Hey,
for
win
everybody.
One for the Mick, Brian.
Davey Martinez, you know, the protege, was third on this list, and Joe got zippity-doo-dah. But you're right. I mean, you know, looking, it's interesting to see the local guys weighing in. The Tribune had its predictions yesterday in their Sunday paper, and Rizzo got a few MVP nods for the from the local media. But I think I'm with you, Molly. As long as Chris Bryant is expecting to have the season that he is expecting to have, he will be in the talk and conversation. I don't think you're going to have two candidates. You know, I get every metric points Joey Votto. I guess if I were to watch 162 games of the Reds, if it was some sort of you know, house arrest type thing where I had that was part of the sentence, I'd appreciate Joey.
Only way that would happen.
Yeah, I'd appreciate Joey Votto more. But until he actually takes his, you know, mega contract, which I guess every number statistic says he earns, and moves to a team that actually is going to be relevant, then I'm not behind the Joey Votto campaign. So I guess it would be Chris Bryant coming in third, and I think he's going to try to change the postseason poll when it's all said and done.
I'm not surprised about Chris Bryant being considered third. As long as he's considered in the top three, I think that's about right. I mean, you have Bryce Harper, who's going to be a free agent next year. We all know that that does do something to athletes in terms of motivation. Joey Votto is playing for a team where the lights are just off, so he could just have fun, and there's no pressure whatsoever on Votto, so he's going to crush the ball in near MVP season last year as well. You know, with Manager of the Year, I think, Brian, you were making the point that, you know, you have to be a surprise winning team to get Manager of the Year, or you have to be a rookie that does well. That's why I think Dave Martinez was put up there for Washington. So I guess it would be by process of elimination. And a guy that I always think is kind of underrated, despite the fact that he is a star and considered that, in Anthony Rizzo.
No, respect me!
That's right. I was just thinking about, was that the Washington?
Yeah, yeah. He was yelling to Dusty. Yeah, and by the way, Wilson Contreras got votes in this poll, but no Anthony, no Tony Rizzo.
That's pretty simple. Well, I guess I could see with Wilson, with the position that he plays.
Sure.
But Rizzo never quite gets his due, and I think that he'll make a run for it this year.
You know, I'm sort of with you, Brian, on Joey Votto. Not that I don't think he's a great player.
No, he's a great player.
And I'm not saying, you know, he's anonymous or anything. Everybody realizes he's a fantastic hitter. I mean, the numbers that he puts up year in, year out are incredible, on par with very few players in the last 20, 30 years, honestly, what he does. But there are too many good players in the National League that play for good teams to give the award to somebody that is on a team that's going to lose another 90 to 95 games.
Careful. Andre Dawson's listening.
I'm sure that he's not.
But Dustin, his number Dustin, one fan.
But oh Dustin might yeah. be, and yeah. Dustin will be offended if I take a shot at the Hawk.
Put your number in this check.
So I think that I think
500,000 sounds about right.
Sounds great.
The MVP award will probably go to somebody from the Cubs, somebody from the Nationals, somebody from the Dodgers, whether it's Seager, Harper, or Bryant. And I think that Rizzo, you know, while he maybe here in the city does garner a little bit more respect than he does on a national basis, I just think that Bryant is better at everything than Anthony Rizzo, except maybe leadership, and if you want to get into intangibles and unquantifiable things like that. But Bryant does everything better than Rizzo, and he's the best player on what I think will be the best team this year. I think the Cubs are the class of the NL once again. So I think that Bryant is too low at number three here. I think he'll probably get that MVP award again, his second one. And as far as Joe Maddon, like Grody just alluded to, that usually goes to a manager on a surprise team, somebody that you don't expect. So I think Joe has kind of outgrown the award, for lack of a better term.
You know, when you look at this MLB.com poll for NL MVP, what I'm not surprised about is Bryce Harper at number one. Of course, Bryce Harper is an amazing, amazing superstar. But what I am surprised about is, yeah, Chris Bryant at three and Joey Votto ahead of him. I mean, Votto's well-respected, and he's good. Don't get me wrong, but I am just surprised that he is ahead.
He's Canadian. Does he even qualify?
Morneau!
I'll have to check the fine print.
Berther.
In terms of the manager conversation, I'm not surprised that Maddon's left off the list. I mean, I know the Cubs struggled in the first half of the season last season, and they got back on it and hot in the second half of the season. I'm surprised that they have Mickey Callaway and Dave Martinez as number one and number three. I mean, new managers. I'm surprised by that. I'm not surprised. I'm surprised Craig Counsell isn't number one, to be honest, because of, you know, the Brewers had their best record last season. So I'm a little surprised at the layout of this poll.
No, that's a good question.
Are you surprised the Cubs chose Victor Caratini over Chris Giménez as their backup catcher?
Probably not as surprised as some people around the team and covering the team, because pretty much it'd been pretty foregone conclusion that Chris Giménez was not only going to get that job, he was going to be the caddy catcher to Yu Darvish, and I guess should have paid much more attention to Joe Maddon when that first week of spring training he said, well, that's pretty much an overstated storyline, you know. If that was Joe's way of saying this is a competition, and now the competition's over. Now, it might be temporary. It might be for 6 or 8 weeks to see if Caratini can get enough at-bats, even as a pinch hitter, or, you know, spelling Wilson Contreras once a week or whatever the plan is to get Caratini in there. But he's a switch hitter. I am surprised because we had Giménez on, and boy, you'd love to talk baseball to that guy each and every week. But if he wasn't going to be the personal catcher for Yu Darvish, then you got the guy on the wrong side of his career. He's the good news is he decided he would go to Des Moines unless someone offered him a better deal, and then the Cubs will release him. But I would expect to see Giménez up here by June when it's all said and done. But I am surprised. But a lot of people had Giménez having that job from day one, and they're even more surprised.
Yeah, I had heard that it wasn't going to be that easy, I'd heard that Caratini was hitting the ball too well to not have on that team, and I ran that by some of our experts. I heard it in Arizona when I was out there,
yeah.
And I ran it by some of our experts and was shot down on that idea. Just flat out shot down that Caratini needed more time in the minors, and if he's not going to play, why have him on the team? And his bat didn't matter. The Giménez was the only guy that really knew how to catch Yu Darvish. I got to tell you, I'm a little disappointed that this story flew so far under the radar, because as we talked about, really, that was the only positional battle. You know, you had to figure out the bullpen and you had to figure out who the backup catcher was. And I thought that was interesting, this idea that it would be Caratini. And like I said, I was almost laughed off my own show. So there you go. I mean, it turns out that every once in a while, the blind squirrel finds a nut.
Molly, we're laughing with you, okay?
As always. Far as you know.
Yes. I am surprised.
As far as you know.
I am surprised that Victor Caratini is the backup catcher, but pleasantly surprised. 24 years old. Guy's a switch hitter, or as they say now on his wiki page, ambidextrous. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And you know what? If Yu Darvish needs his personal catcher, they could bring Giménez up and they could have him there. But I think this just makes sense to developed, like they've done with all their young players, the Cubs. To some degree, they have developed them at the major league level, and they have the luxury with all the talent that is on this team of doing that again. He's a backup catcher. The move makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, you just nailed it right there, Grody. You said that the Cubs have a pretty good track record of bringing up young players over the past few years. I think it's a bit of an understatement. I think they have a phenomenal track record of it, and this just seems to be more of the same. This is a guy that fits the Cubs' way of, you know, working those long at-bats, you know, wearing the pitcher out, seeing a lot of pitches, making the guy work hard. He only hit .237 in the spring, but that .408 OBP means that he's been taking his walks, and he hit, what, .340 in the minors last year?
I'm down with OPP.
As well. Yeah, you know me. So I think it makes a lot of sense. They have earned the benefit of the doubt in developing young players. We might have said the same thing about Wilson Contreras a couple years ago when he came up. You know, is he going to play every day? Is this the right move at the right time? They got three catchers now, and Wilson Contreras turned into a pretty decent player, I think you could say at this point. Just a little decent.
Scores
and,
learned.
And Wilson Contreras and Victor Caratini are like best
are they
of
buds?
Best
really?
Friends. Oh,
that,
my God.
See,
so maybe that's
there
it.
There that's
his
you go.
Personal friend, yes.
I'm absolutely not surprised at all by this. You know, the Cubs bringing up a guy out of their own system. And as Brian said, unfortunately, Jimenez is just on the wrong end of his career here. So, yeah, not surprised at all by this, and I expect big things from Caratini. I think it's a great move, and as Grody brought up, I think the switch hitting component is something
ambidextrous.
Ambidextrous.
That is not synonymous with switch hitting. It just means that you are both right-handed and left-handed.
No. He doesn't wear a glove, so he can throw with either hand.
But it actually
as well.
Says on his wiki page, bats ambidextrous.
Yeah, someone ought to talk to the wiki people.
This is a big question, okay? You ready for that?
I'll let you know if it's big.
How long will Carson Fulmer last in the White Sox starting rotation?
That's such a mean question. Obviously, no. Whoever came up with this question didn't think very long.
Who submitted this, Hector Santiago?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think he belonged in the rotation to start the season. I think he's going to be a guy to keep an eye on. I think that, you know, I guess until Carlos comes back is the quick answer, right?
2019?
June, July. Well, that's nice, Brian. There you go again.
Who starts first? Who's first, Corey Crawford or Carlos Rodon? Who's back in
very
action?
Very mean-spirited,
that's
Brian.
Pretty mean
on a
spirited.
Monday morning
yeah. Yeah.
with right. the Ramblers in the Final Four.
That didn't take long to knock me into my place. but I don't think that he really won that job. I just think that they're hopeful, and he's a young guy, and they're having that kind of season. So I would imagine that I would like to say he gets through June, but I'm being delirious if I believe that. I give him... I mean, how long did... Who was the kid, Dylan Covey? How long did he last? They kept him up for the first four or five
too
starts,
long.
Something like... Far too long. So I suppose he's on the Covey plan.
I wish I could... I would know what to make of this kid. After he got shelled, he thought, well, I wasn't worried. I was just working on some pitches. I didn't care what where the hits were going, where runs were going up on the board. And then... The last couple outings, he said, oh, yeah, I felt a lot of pressure. After he was named to the rotation of the team, oh, yeah, I felt a lot of pressure. I was trying to get make sure I got that job. So, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Now, if he can work both sides of the plate, maybe it'll be okay. Here's hoping it's the entirety of the season because he's part of, you're hoping he's part of a big part of the future or part of the future, and Hector Santiago is not that guy. So... How long? I mean, if I'm guessing today, I would say they'll give him half a dozen, eight starts. And if a lot of them look like the ones in spring training earlier, then he probably won't be the fifth guy in June. But I would think they'll give him a pretty decent run. I would expect a couple months to see how it goes and check back first week of June.
All right, serious question for you guys. Are the White Sox this year in 2018, are they still in tank mode? I mean, are they trying to lose games this year? I mean, is this like the year that they're supposed to be 500?
Well, I asked that question a couple weeks ago too, Mark, because If you're trying to, you know, not win games, then the growing pains, you'll live with the growing pains for this whole
then you
season.
Then you live with Carson Fulmer for the whole season.
Exactly. I don't know if it's a pure tank, but it's a lot of young players.
Right.
It's more player development than throwing out, you know, crappy veterans
and
intentionally
fan,
losing.
Do you want to see a top 10 pick in the draft again next year? Or do you want to see a team that's three or four
I would
games?
Rather see the young players develop and contribute they're more middle of the pack than that. I don't think they're going to be picking in the top 10 again.
Being Sox camp, I think the feeling is that last year and this year are going to be fairly similar. They're going to be better in September than they are to start the season. Let's put it that way. So they'll start out. The fear is they're missing guys that were on that team last year, like Carlos Quentin and Melky Cabrera and Todd Frazier. And you can laugh at that, but those were professional baseball players.
Yeah.
And they don't have that now. So they're fearful that they start very slow, but they believe they will come out.
I think you only take Carson Fulmer out if you're doing it to protect him, sort of like pulling a goalie where
he's
just
getting shelled every time. Yeah.
Like sometimes you see a manager just leave a reliever out there to die. Like, you can't do that to Carson Fulmer. And, you know, what's more real? Is Lucas Giolito's 2-something ERA the real thing, or is the Carson Fulmer 16-something ERA? We never really know in spring training, but keep him in as long as you possibly can. That's my answer.
It's an 11.81 ERA to you, Grody. Get your
numbers.
Yeah,
he shaved it down there the last couple hours.
Yeah. My bad for hibernating.
He was pretty good his last start. I can't shake the Dylan Covey comparison now, Mully. You've ingrained that into my head, so oddly, I went back and I looked at what Dylan Covey did last year. May 23rd was his last start before he hit the DL last season. At that time, he was rocking an 8.12 ERA. So I think if Carson Fulmer can keep it under 8, he'll be a solid member of the rotation.
That's a nice
target. All year long.
Defense will love him.
You know, in the spirit of the Loyola Ramblers, I just want to put this disclaimer out there really quickly that I hope Carson Fulmer has a successful run with this number 5 spot.
Listen
here in
to
the
nice
rotation.
Guy Ray. You're such a nice guy, Ray.
He's lovely.
Mully, I believe it was you that said June. That's when I read this question, that was my thought. He will last until June, and today is March 26th. I'm calling it right now. Carson Fulmer will last until June when they pull him, the White Sox pull him from the rotation and call up Michael Kopech.
Whoa, there you go.
Bold prediction.
Nice guy, Ray. Yeah.
All right. That is the 5-5, 312-644-6767. How did the Ramblers get there? What is the difference for Loyola getting to the Final Four, and can they win again? Who has to be the MVP of this team for them to make it to the championship game? You see, Michigan, it is now a one-game season. It's been a one-game season for a long time for Loyola. They had a win at the end of the year. They had to win the conference championship. They had to win the tournament. And now they got it's every game is the last one for every team, unless you can find a way to win. So how they do it. 312-644-6767. Mully and Hanley on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.